You know what that music means? It means that you are here with the Alliance Against Seclusion and Restraint live series. My name is Guy Stevens. I am the host, the executive director of the Alliance Against Seclusion and Restraint. And if you are here joining us and you're not familiar with who the Alliance is, the Alliance is a nonprofit that we started about 5 years ago, focused on, of course, restraint and seclusion, suspension, expulsion, corporal punishment, a lot of the punitive and exclusionary discipline that happens in schools, and some of these things that happen in other settings as well. We're really focused on how we can do better, not only for our kids, but for teachers and staff, and ultimately trying to create more safer and more inclusive schools as well. So that's a little bit about the Alliance. And of course, my name is Guy Stevens, and I will be your host for the next hour and 10-15 minutes or so. We've got a great show in store for you today, and I'm very excited, as always. We actually have Jennifer Abinant joining us today, and I'll be telling you more about Jennifer here in just a moment. But before I do, a couple of logistics. The show, as always, is streamed live on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, X. I think I got everything. And you can also go back after the fact and watch it on any of those platforms. And of course, we make it available as an audio-only podcast as well. So if you want to listen on the go, you can download it through Apple Music or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Do want to let you know that we've got a couple of sponsors that help us to do the podcast and bring it to you. And I want to share with you a little bit about our first sponsor here, which is Supportable Solutions. Supportable Solutions is an educational consultancy, and it is run by Connie Persick, who is a friend and colleague and somebody doing amazing work. Connie has developed something called the Why Toolkit, which is a really amazing tool that can be used to get to kind of the deeper why. Imagine if you took a functional behavior assessment and you blew it up and you created something that really got down to, why someone might be having a difficult time. Connie's work is really fantastic. So let me share with you just a short clip about the Why Toolkit.
Behaviors are signals to the deeper whys. The Why Toolkit, a tool built for and approved by teachers, parents, and administrators that can both assess and support individuals struggling with behaviors. Connie has created a document that turns typical behavioral documents upside down and replaces them with a deep dive into what really matters, how to support each child within a compassionate and relational framework based on their individual differences. The Why Toolkit was found to decrease seclusion and restraint by 21% in a year-long pilot study.
Is available now. The Why Toolkit's available, and you can, it's designed. It could be used by a school district, an individual, parent or family member can even buy a single subscription to see what it's all about. It's a great, great approach, and love Connie's work and appreciate the support. One other quick mention here of another sponsor. Want to mention this book here, Without Restraint. Without Restraint was written by Robert and Ryan Delena, and it's a book that really kind of talks about their journey. Ryan was a student who was misunderstood in the name of behavior. Ryan was a student that found himself being restrained and secluded. Robert and his wife were on the other side of a lot of bad input and advice about what to do. Ultimately, Robert took his son one day skiing and discovered a passion that his son developed for skiing, is now professionally skiing and doing a lot of amazing work. But this book is really kind of a journey. It's a journey about how Ryan was really kind of underestimated, had very low expectations, and the support and love that his family gave him really were helpful in him not only being successful, but really doing some amazing things. So I want to thank Robert and Ryan Delena. They're also a sponsor here for our podcast. And you know what? I actually have a couple copies of this book, and maybe we'll give away one for free. If somebody's interested in a copy of the book, if you send us an email, and Courtney maybe is behind the scenes, she can put up an email address if you're interested in a copy. I'll give away a copy or two to the first one or two people that respond, and that'll be something fun to do. So let's get on with our program today. As I mentioned before, we have Jennifer Abinant joining us, and she's going to be talking about something called the Safe and Sound Protocol. So this should be really exciting. Let me go ahead and bring Jennifer up on the screen here, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about Jennifer. But before I do, I'm going to ask you to do something for me, and that is, if you are here and you are participating, feel free in the chat to tell us who you are and where you're from. It's always great to see where people are joining us from. Always fantastic to know who's out in the audience today. So in the chat, let us know who you are and where you're from. Jennifer, welcome. I'm going to give a little introduction to who you are here. So bear with me as I go through this. You know, you are a parenting coach, expressive arts educator, IEP advocate, safe and sound protocol provider, trauma-informed consultant who uses neuro-affirming and trauma-informed approaches to empower families to make the most informed decisions that support their child's unique needs. You have had a lot of training in child development, including from the Merit Center. Of course, good friends at the Merit Center and their certification program. You have a certificate in interpersonal neurobiology. You have trauma-informed expressive arts approach credentials as well. Certificate in traumatic stress studies from the Trauma Research Foundation with Dr. Wessel van der Kolk. And you've completed hundreds of hours of professional development in areas of DIR floor time, attachment theory, polyvagal theory, neuroscience, inclusive education, and are a graduate of the UC Davis LEND program for leadership in neurodevelopmental education. You are also, and this is really important, a volunteer at the Alliance Against Seclusion and Restraint and an advocate to educate on the dangers of the use of these practices, including supporting legislative efforts to protect students. Your own advocacy, you know, you have your own advocacy and consulting business, which is Crow's Nest Advocacy and Consulting, where you provide a lot of different services to support families through expressive arts education, safe and sound protocol, therapeutic listening, and individual and group parenting sessions and support to adults in the parent-child dyad. You've written several articles and blogs for organizations such as ours, the Alliance Against Seclusion and Restraint, the Merit Center. You're founding a member of a local organization, which is YOLO Neurodiverse Network, with three other parents with a mission to develop a culture of belonging and appreciation for neurodiversity by increasing community understanding, acceptance, and engagement. Kind of connecting individuals, connecting caregivers, connecting communities is really what that organization's all about. As a neurodivergent person yourself, and you know, also a mom of three neurodivergent children, one of whom experienced early developmental trauma and is autistic, you believe in the values of lived experience and that we must learn to meet children where they are, not where we think they should be. And of course, you do a lot talking about how this shift really starts with finding a new path for families, so that they're able to experience growth, balance, and joy as individuals in a whole relational system. You know, I know that you and I have known each other for quite a while now, and as I look at your bio ends in a quote that I love, which is, "See a child differently, see a different child," from Dr. Serge Schenker. You and I have had the opportunity to know each other for some time now and collaborate, and of course, you've been a volunteer here at the Alliance, and I'm always... you know, it's always such an honor to work with you and talk to you. And you've been involved in leading book studies here for us at the Alliance. But, you know, what really amazes me is the amount of training and professional development you have done. I feel like sometimes if there's a course out there and I'm like, Jennifer's probably taken that, you know, I can learn more about this. You know, but you're somebody that's on a mission and, you know, you're on the same mission that we're on here at the Alliance. And of course, probably why we're collaborating together, but you know, it's all about doing better. So really appreciate you being here and bringing your perspective. You're going to be talking to us today about one of the things that you've been trained in, which is a safe and sound mm-hmm. protocol. And that's really exciting because that's something that kind of is out of the work of Stephen Porges and the polyvagal theory, which is something that we talk about quite a bit here in a lot of the work we do. And I know that you do as well. So I am thrilled to have you here today and just want to say welcome.
Well, thank you. Wow. What a you think feels like I have lived a life, but I definitely have. I feel interestingly enough, it wasn't always in informal education. It was through lived experience first and foremost with my children, especially my son. And that's what led me to my neurodivergent brain. I needed answers. I needed answers. I needed to understand, you know, the paths that we were told to take and the paths that were created through systems were not paths that were right for my child. And we had to ultimately truly understand what was going on. And that's what led me to all of this, understanding the neuroscience, understanding trauma, understanding physiology, understanding how to help our children, you know, who may otherwise, kind of like that book that you were just discussing, you know, people are underestimating our children. People are giving up on our children. But as the parent to the child that everybody gave up on, I wasn't accepting that. And, you know, he didn't go to school for 9 years because of that. But now he, you know, is off in community college doing amazing things and has, you know, a bright future and a goal and is goal driven and is everything that everybody said he couldn't be. And so I always appreciate and want people to understand, you know, we are our children's best advocate. We know our kids best. And I hope that some of the information through my experiences can help bring some hope to somebody else. Because it can feel pretty hopeless at times, you know, is not a system that, you know, is working with families. They're just saying you fit into this box or else. And when that doesn't happen, you don't feel like you have a lot of options. I mean, but I appreciate these opportunities to share with the wider audience, because I do believe every child can be successful. And it is not through the approaches that we're often being told by our professionals in the field. We have to dig deeper. I love Connie's why toolkit. What is the why? What is the barrier? And it's so often not what everybody thinks, because that's not how we were. It's not how many were trained. So, you know, but let's not give up on our kids. They truly need us to be pushing and digging deeper.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you are on a mission, and you are having, I think, an amazing impact, not only in knowing families that you've worked with and people that you support in the larger community, the work that you've done here with us. And you've written some amazing articles. We mentioned that in your bio. But I always think about one of the early articles that you wrote. And I say early because we've known each other for a few years now. But you wrote an article called Regulation Before Education. And I think about that all the time, because it so much relates to you know, the brain science and all the things that we've learned through, you know, this work. But I really appreciate all that you're doing. And we're here to talk about some exciting work that you've been doing related to the Safe and Sound Protocol. So I'm going to pull up your presentation here in a minute. So if you want to get that ready.
Yeah,
in the meantime, I'm just going to share a couple of people who said hello. Okay, Neil's here from the Polyvagal Certificate Program. I was part of that recently. And I saw that we had, Cassie here from Michigan and New Jersey. One state cannot keep Cassie. also the head of the Michigan Advocates to End Seclusion and Restraint, an allied organization doing amazing work. We have Chantel here, and Chantel, you know well. Chantel is often your collaborator on the book studies. Of course, our lead Canadian volunteer, and you know, so she's happy to be here supporting you and. You know, how wonderful you are and had some experience with you with the Safe and Sound Protocol as well. Also have, and Linda, I feel like I haven't seen you in a while here. One of my friends from New Zealand here, and I used to joke as we would get started on the podcast, like, we have people from all over the world that'll join us. And then Linda would be like, hi, you know, from New Zealand. So it was always fun. But it looks like Linda's in the UK right now doing some research. I am sure that that's research I'm going to be interested in. So hopefully we'll catch up. Davina here from Connecticut. Let's see, not able to be here 100%, unfortunately. Well, don't worry. We've got this recorded as well. So you can come back and listen as well. But thank you for jumping on. So we've got a number of people who have already jumped in and said hello. Feel free again, if you're watching live, tell us in the chat who you are and where you're from. And Jennifer, if you want to hit, go ahead and hit present on your presentation.
Okay.
I'm going to bring it up on the screen here, and I see it. Perfect.
All right.
So at this point, we can all see your presentation. And we talked a little bit ahead of time. You're going to be sharing some slides. You're going to be kind of leading us through your experience. But you also said that you were open to, you know, questions and comments along the way. So what I'm going to do is, instead of disappearing, which I sometimes do when people present, I'm going to stay here. And I'm gonna be quiet unless I have something to say or unless I see something from somebody else. And I may interrupt or interject occasionally just to ask a question, or if somebody in the audience has a question to ask that, because you said you were fine kind of taking questions as we went today. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to you. But I do want to remind people, if you are watching live, feel free to tell us in the chat who you are, where you're from. But also, as you're watching today, if you have a question or a comment, go ahead and put it in, and we'll try to get to questions and comments kind of during the presentation today. Depending on how we're looking at time, at some point I may hold off and wait until the end if we start looking like we've got a lot of questions coming. But let me go ahead and hand it off to you, and I will be quiet. But if you need anything, know I'm here. I know that you only now see your presentation screen, but we're all here and we're watching. So,
okay, Jennifer, great.
Thank you so much for being here today, and thank you for sharing about your work.
Oh, well, thanks again for having me. To have this platform is such a privilege and an honor. We are so fortunate to have an organization such as the Alliance Against Seclusion and Strait doing all the work that you are doing. And so as a, someone who's been personally touched by these practices, I am just so glad that, in these 5 years I've known you, things are changing, things are shifting, it's slow, but it is happening. So I appreciate the bio again. As I said, I come to this first and foremost through lived experience. My son is now almost 20. My oldest is 22. All three of my kids are neurodivergent. And, my son was the one that really led me on a path of my own self-discovery, trying to understand what is happening and how do I help support him in a way that I'm not familiar with at this time, but I'm going to keep trying. One thing that we did experience was one of the early versions of what is now called the Safe and Sound Protocol. And this was probably about 15 years ago. So it was a long time ago. The Safe and Sound Protocol is not new. It has evolved over this period of time, which is what I find and why I got involved with it. Because I understood the science to a level. I saw how it can impact a child who has chronic dysregulation, regardless of the cause. My son has trauma. His nervous system was essentially just on fire all the time related to his different neurology as well as the trauma. Trying all the different methods and therapies, to me, the Safe and Sound Protocol made a lot of sense. 15 years ago, we didn't have nearly the data that we now have. And the protocol was very different and much more strict. They had to wear these certain headphones. Well, if you have a kid who's aversive to headphones, that's not going to work out so well. But we did see small changes, and that's how I knew it was something that was effective. And then eventually he stopped because that just became a demand that he no longer could tolerate because of those headphones. Life was just challenging. So as I've been studying and learning the last 5-6 years, I wanted to know what are the things that I can bring to other people? What are things that I can bring to myself and my own family? Because we have also struggled as a unit, because we are not just an individual. When our children struggle, we struggle. Our family struggles. And what I now know all these years later is how unnecessary so many of those struggles were, because it was, again, trying to fit a system that wasn't meant for my family, who we're all neurodivergent, but especially my children, and especially my son. So I'm just really feel very privileged to be able to bring this to families as a potential tool. There is never one solution, one answer, and it's so dependent on many factors. But I always say, if there's another tool I can put in my toolbox that's non-invasive, I'm all about that. And personally, music is something that has always been something that brought joy to our family. My children actually have self-taught themselves during COVID how to play instruments. And I have to say, my son is an amazing guitarist. He doesn't read music. It's all by his ear. And it is quite amazing to see, again, a child who everybody gave up on just explode with so much potential and joy. And so just always remembered, we just cannot give up on our children. Every single one of them can be successful. It just might look different. So with that being said, yes, this is a journey to a better nervous system state regulation. You know, isn't that what we all want, right? This is what we want in our schools. We want this in our house, within ourselves, in our communities. And I feel like we're kind of in a place right now, especially within our school systems, that we're just kind of stuck. We haven't quite grasped this idea of what is nervous system state regulation and how is that maybe impacting how everyone is going about their day. Here's a particular quote that I actually just heard the other day, and I had to write it down because I believe this is so beautiful. Listen to the whispers of the nervous system before they become shouts. Just remember that these are those nonverbal cues. These are the signals our children are showing us and sometimes even telling us. But we as a society don't appreciate when a child says no or says not now or wait or, you know, any kind of pushback on what we would normally call compliance. But yet those are signals that the child needs a minute, isn't able to do something, needs more support. I mean, we just have to approach things through a whole new lens that is no longer based on compliance and because I said so as the adult. So again, a little bit about me. These are just some things. I'm an expressive arts educator. I have found this to be an amazing tool that I had been doing for the last 20 years with my children. I didn't know this was a field. It just wasn't on my radar. And of course I was knee deep in parenting neurodivergent children. And of course, I now have just been loving bringing this to my clients. And still for myself, it's actually a very healing, way to bring ourselves back to ourselves. For all my, you know, these last 20 years have been stressful and I at many times lost myself trying to get through moments, trying to get through difficult things. And you know, that's what we now really understand through all of this research is how important it is for our own nervous system and how we are contagious to our children's emotional nervous system. So, you know, again, more tools in my toolbox, and I really appreciate having tools because for so long I felt like I didn't have tools, and that's when we feel stuck. So I hope that maybe some of these things can be added to some of your toolbox to help you get through some more difficult times. So with that, part of this is also just let's take a minute. Let's take a minute to breathe, to bring some attention back to our bodies, to connect again. I'm not sure what time of day it is where you are, but here it's a little before one and on a Thursday after a nice Mother's Day weekend, kind of a hurried week. But what I find in addition to the music and the sound is ensuring that I am bringing my attention back to my body. Where am I? Because I don't know where my nervous system state is. I can't be the adult, the parent, the spouse, the friend, the community member that I want to be and that I feel is an important part of you know who I am. I like to give to people, but I have to really make sure I'm taking care of myself. And so part of this is through I've been doing breath practices and as called focus attention practices. That's a term I learned from Dr. Lori Desitels, who is a big fan of the Alliance here. So if we just take a minute, just feel your feet on the floor. If you're sitting, feel your butt in the seat and maybe keep your hands, put your hands on the top of your thighs and just kind of rub your hands back and forth, kind of that friction on top of your thighs. And we're just going to take a minute to feel that presence. And then we're going to just take some deep breaths. And we're going to, whether it be through your mouth or your nose, and we're just going to have a longer exhale than an inhale. But I want you to just, and if you feel safe, go ahead and close your eyes. I tend to keep my eyes open. That can be a very, you know, if somebody says you have to close your eyes, you know, that's something that is can be a very trauma trigger for many people for a variety of reasons. And I don't know why mine is, but I do prefer to keep my eyes open, probably because I have a very hypervigilant nervous system myself. And so let's take a breath in. I don't know if you could hear that, but there was a little bit of a sound when I did my exhale. And that provides a little bit of resistance, which is a very regulating physiological shift for our nervous system. So we'll do that again. One more time. Good. So we always want to have that longer exhale. That is always the fastest way to access our vagus nerve, our nervous system, to bring us back into our bodies. And you know, I think the world needs a lot more intentional breathing. And so let's get started. So again, this is a journey to better nervous system state regulation, but Why nervous system regulation? Why is this essential? Why do people keep talking about it? Well, you know, it's definitely vital for our well-being. The autonomic nervous system regulates all essential bodily functions, our breathing, our sleep, our mental clarity, digestion, concentration, our social connection. We know, and I would say we know because we feel, when our bodies don't experience these basic needs, or if there's a barrier to these basic needs. And this is when we become dysregulated. We become out of balance. This is when we then see some poor health and poor well-being. We see stress, anxiety, all kinds of other both physiological and psychological challenges. And I think we're seeing a lot of that right now. So, you know, having better nervous system regulation, it's essential for our well-being, and it helps us better respond to stress instead of reacting. We become more attuned to ourselves, and we are in more control of our emotions, allowing us to move with more flexibility and flow. Dr. Dan Siegel talks about the banks of rigidity and chaos, and we want to be that river of flow that just keeps moving down. And, you know, we know when we experience a flow state, it feels good. Also being, you know, having a regulation in our nervous system allows us to be more social. It allows us to be connected and help us shift us. You know, we don't ever stay in one state. We're constantly shifting. But it's when we notice if we're shifting into a state that takes us out of our connection, and we're not at ease, and we're not comfortable, then we, you know, what do we need to do to get back to that? And, you know, this is about feeling good. It's about feeling present. And most importantly, it's about our sense of safety. And you're going to hear me talk about this word a lot today, relational felt sense of safety. So I'm going to kind of jog a little bit back and forth. I'm going to do a little bit of some of the basic safe and sound protocol information, but then I'll be providing some of the information and the neuroscience throughout the talk as well. So in simplest terms, the safe and sound protocol is a therapeutic intervention that helps to regulate the autonomic nervous system and improve emotional regulation and social engagement. Dr. Stephen Porges is the developer of the polyvagal and the safe sound protocol. Essentially, it is music that is specially filtered that cues our nervous system for signals of safety. And it is remarkable. I'll go into why I think it's remarkable from my own experience in a little bit. A little bit about, again, why the SSP works. And by the way, this is me, young me, a long time ago, with my little boy. And, you know, why the SSP works is basically because of the neuroanatomy of the ventral vagal complex. Our bodies were made to have this ability. The social engagement system provides this face to heart connection. And in this picture, you can see that that face to heart connection, we're connected, we're attuned. It's so important. This moment of connection, and I can recall many of these types of moments, of why this is what brings our social engagement system back online, bringing us regulation. And, you know, it, this is where the Safe and Sound protocol helps individuals gain more access to their ventral vagal complex. We are wired for connection, but our default is protection, as they call it, because human survival is dependent on co-regulating our physiological state via social connection. And this face-heart connection is what brings us to be connected to others, which is our human imperative for survival. So again, you know, the SSP is based on the principles of the polyvagal theory, and it was designed to reduce sound sensitivities, improve auditory processing, enhance physiological state regulation, and increase social engagement behaviors by listening to specially modulated music. Some things that are, you know, we hear a lot from people who have done it is it's easier and more spontaneous social connection. We find that many have better social, better emotional control. There's improvements in auditory and other sensory sensitivities. And there's improved access to executive functions and other higher cognitive abilities. You know, this is what our higher cortex does. And we just want to improve access to what we already have up there. What also people report is there's better focus and attention. There's better expressive and receptive language skills, lower anxiety, better physiological state regulation, improved learning, enhanced sleep, reduction in pain levels, and increased effectiveness of other modalities. And this is really important because, for example, as I mentioned, when my son was younger and doing this, he was so dysregulated so often that he couldn't access all the therapies and modalities that were actually available because of that dysregulation. And so when we have a child who experiences that level of dysregulation, we first have to gain access to some sense of regulation in any way possible to help increase that effectiveness of whether it be play therapy or occupational therapy or speech therapy. Because until that physiological state is in a place to access it, then things again stay stuck. You know, I personally found, because of course I have done the SSP, I personally have found my sleep has been better. I definitely have a reduction in pain levels. I have a lot of joint pain and old sport injury pains and just things that kind of don't make sense to a lot of people. And I have found just for my own nervous system state that has been basically so hypervigilant since the day I was born, as I was always told, much lower anxiety, much greater focus. And honestly, I feel like it's allowed me to be able to do things like this. Once upon a time, I would never have been able to get over my anxiety to speak to an audience. That was just not in my nature. The anxiety was too great. My stress would be too great. I just could not get over those barriers. And so this is one thing that I have found. It's really given me greater capacity in a way that really helps me have a more fulfilled life because I'm able to share and use my platform and my experiences to help others. So I do think that's been really wonderful for myself.
Hey, Jennifer, I was just going to jump in with a quick, a quick question.
Yeah.
So, you know, you talk about the benefits of doing the Safe and Sound protocol in and of themselves, right? So there's these benefits and kind of on your previous slide. But then the last thing you say, I think, is probably really, really important, which is to be able to access other things that might be necessary or helpful and your journey, whether it be healing from trauma or whatever the case may be, safe and sound can actually help you to be better able to take advantage of other modalities, is what you said. But essentially, if I'm thinking about, we are often working with a lot of families and individuals and educators and you know, children that have had some pretty negative experiences. And of course, I think it's always so critical to really understand the impact that these, you know, traumatic events can have on kids, and make sure that we take them seriously and that we're getting people the help that they need. But, you know, that's something that I've kind of heard before from families, like, well, we tried this and this, but these things didn't work. What I'm getting from you, and this is really interesting, is this idea that safe and sound can kind of help you gain access to things that you might not otherwise gain access to.
Yeah, it's because like a bridge.
It's like focusing on that nervous system piece so that you then have the ability to, that seems like a tremendous benefit, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it.
Well, right, you know, because how many parents, and I was one of those parents that you're like, mm-hmm. you know, great, we have all these tools, so-called tools that, you know, whether it be cognitive behavior therapy or, you know, even, you know, mm-hmm. OT speech. But if we aren't first focused on the physiology of the individual, then they're not able to access. I mean, I hear this all the time where kids have, you know, like in school, they'll have in their IEP, they get OT and speech. Well, half the time the child refuses to go. Well, okay. So you can't access a tool if we're, you know, it's again, it's taking that step backwards to go, huh, I wonder what's the barrier. And it's their physiology. It's not willful. It's not them being difficult. It's not them, you know, making a choice. This is their physiology being the barrier to being able to, you know, they might know they need to go to speech because it's going to help them or to occupational therapy. But if, you know, state regulation, which is constantly fluctuating, becomes dysregulated, that's a child who's like, I can't do that. I can't do that. And I'm not going to do that. And, you know, basically fight me if you're going to try to force me, because that's the physiology of a nervous system that is in probably experiencing a lot of adversity, chronic stress, trauma, and has had also, our brains and our brains are shaped by experiences. If a child has been told, you know, do this, do this, do this, or, you know, these control and compliance methods, they have now learned, you know, if I go, I might get a sticker, but I just can't go. My nervous system just is not able to do that. And they don't have, you know, as I'm talking about breathing, and we'll be talking about some other really helpful methods that we all can do in our everyday. Children don't have that skill. You know, we could tell them to breathe, but we actually, this is where so much of this is modeling and being their external regulator, just like when they were infants. I mean, even down to there's co-regulation, but as an infant, we were their external regulator. Right. We provided everything they needed so that they could feel safe. And for many of our kids who've had really negative experiences, we need to be that external regulator because they don't even feel safe in their body, let alone in their environments or with many people. And so who is that one person who brings a sense of safety to them? And then it just, it opens up a whole new world to support services. But I would even say to a child who can be a child who can, you know, again, explore maybe, be curious. Many of our children don't have that skill or that ability because they're so stuck in their nervous systems because of their neurological differences and whatever their experiences have been to that date.
Mm. I'm just going to share a couple of quick comments here. Neil's GS said face heart connection, also quite revealing by Edtronic, the still face paradigm.
Oh, yep.
And then we have here learning without borders, co-regulation is so important. Just kind of commenting there as you're going. So anyway, let me not just, I know you've got a lot you want to cover, so let me let you get back on track. I didn't mean to
interrupt,
but I was just thinking about this. And I mean, it all gets down to that foundational safety, right? And safe and sound protocol, safety, you know, really building on that foundation.
And you know what? The the motto, the, you know, founding principle is safe before sound.
Right.
So even here, it's always about safety and felt safety. You know, we hear a lot of, oh, they're safe, we're safe, I'm a safe person, you know, but it is literally that felt safety. And of course, I cannot go, you know, through a slide presentation without having a Mona Della Hook quote. And this one in particular, I find perfect for this situation. If the ability to control emotions and behaviors isn't fully developed until early adulthood, why are we requiring preschoolers to do this and then punishing them when they can't? And I think we can all say we have seen this repeatedly throughout our schools. Again, back to why regulation, what is regulation? This is a little bit more of a scientific. Nervous system regulation is the sequence of physiological responses our nervous system makes to maintain homeostasis. And Stuart Shanker talks a lot about homeostasis in a lot of his work. And what does that mean exactly? It's any self-regulating process by which an organism tends to maintain stability while adjusting to conditions that are best for its survival. If homeostasis is successful, life continues. It's pretty simple, right? How does a system regulate itself? The nervous system controls every system in our body through complex communication and integration of electrochemical signals between the brain, spinal cord, and the peripheral nervous system. And, you know, again, we talk a lot about balance, integration, you know, regulation is like the buzzword right now. And yet I keep reminding many of the adults, first off, we have to start with co-regulation. If we don't start with co-regulation, we'd have no inner regulation. And it is through these experiences and patterns of felt co-regulation with a safe other, that's how our bodies learn how to quote unquote self-regulate. And a new word I've learned recently from Dr. Dan Siegel. And I'm like, yes, because see, self-regulation, we are actually not meant to be, you know, self-regulating. We are meant to be in relationships with others through co-regulation, but he describes it as inner regulation. And I thought that was really beautiful because we are such a society that is, you know, they need to self-soothe, they need to self-regulate, do this on your own, independence. And that's just not who humans are. So, which makes sense why it's not working very well. So, you know, again, back to co-regulation, human survival is dependent on co-regulating our physiological state through social connection. This is the power of co-regulation. And, you know, we need to have co-regulation before we can ever learn these skills for inner regulation. And, you know, if we expect children to self-regulate, let's be honest, most adults don't even have the skills to self-regulate very well. But yet that's actually how this works. And we need each other. This is about all humans, and whether they're young or old, we need each other to co-regulate. And we have to work from that idea first versus saying, you know, I see in IEPs all the time, child will self-regulate. How will that child self-regulate? How is it being modeled? How is it being felt first through co-regulation? And who is that person for that child? So really important things instead of just self-regulation. And again, you know, the only thing I'll point out in this slide is Stuart Shanker talks about self-control versus self-regulation, because those are not the same things, even though they're often used synonymously. Self-control is about inhibiting impulses. Self-regulation is about identifying the causes and reducing the intensity of the impulse, and when necessary, having the energy to resist. And again, you know, that's kind of back to that balance, having the energy, the balance in your body to have some executive function skill, to, you know, impulse control. That's what self-control is. Self-control is not the same as self-regulation, even though they're constantly used the same. And then, of course, Dr. Bruce Perry, a dysregulated adult can never regulate a dysregulated child. Only a regulated adult can regulate a dysregulated child. I'm a fan of Stuart Shanker, as you can see. You know, he just always comes up with the really great thoughts. And when children are highly stressed or in fight or flight, they shift from social or learning brain to survival brain. And this makes it harder for them to think, make decisions, understand others, and express themselves. And I would add, this is for all adults just as well. So a little bit of this brain science, just quickly, this is again, Bruce Perry's work, and it's about why all functioning of the brain is state dependent. And as you can see, when we look at the graph on the left, you know, a regulated external, we're calm and alert, and you can see we have great access to our neocortex. Then we go down the brainstem, you know, for all those basic life functions, but our cortex is online and we're regulated and functioning and being able to participate and be socially engaged. But then when we experience some stress, when we experience something that dysregulates our nervous system, we don't have that felt sense of safety. You can see, look at how much that cortex functioning goes down. Maybe 10%, you know, here in this example, this individual, we'll just pretend it's an individual, is kind of hanging out in that emotional brain. You know, they're emotional, they're in their fight or flight. They might be, you know, throwing, showing aggressive behaviors, yelling, crying, eloping, which, you know, these are all ways the body's still trying to regulate itself, but there isn't any conscious, this is through literally the body in using adaptive skills that it will be doing to regulate and find some sense of safety. When a child's running, eloping, that's not a child being, you know, difficult. It's a child whose body is doing what it can for survival. It's moving. Movement is how our bodies help bring back that balance and that homeostasis. So when we have kids in the back of the classroom that are fidgeting, it means the child's feeling dysregulated and it's doing its best to regulate itself. Again, back to that child's actually regulating themselves. But we punish many of our kids for when they are acting in service of their body and what it needs to gain access to their cortex. So it's a very ironic. We have a very strange system to say, well, that's okay, but not that. You know, luckily we now have more research, you know, with autistic kids about stimming. Stimming is self-regulating. They're trying to bring their cortex back online, trying to get their body back in balance. And then let's go to this last graph on the right. Highly dysregulated child is, you know, literally no access to the cortex. They are in their brainstem. They are fighting, fleeing. They might be in shutdown. We see that with the dorsal vagal. And it's different dependent on the child. You know, there's some kids who shut down and don't fight. And there's kids who fight, then shut down. And then there's kids who just fight and run. But it's all dependent on their brain state of regulation, not anything willful. And so back to the stress, this is what stress, chronic adversity, you know, we learned that through the ACE study, pattern of stress. If it's unpredictable, extreme, and prolonged, we tend to have sensitized nervous systems. We have vulnerable nervous systems. We see this a lot with our neurodivergent kids. That's kind of just where they're comfortable. That's just because of their body, the way it takes in the world. But if you have stress, you know, that's predictable, moderate, and controllable, then you have a wider window of quote unquote tolerance. I personally like to call it capacity, because I don't think we need to be made to tolerate anything. But as I mentioned in an earlier slide, what the SSP did for me is it improved my capacity to be able to do more and to handle more situations with greater access to my cortex. So, you know, safety brings us towards connection with others, and feelings of threat or danger move us towards protection, and we arm ourselves up. But for many of us, our bodies are comfortable in this. You know, many of our kids are born with nervous systems that are kind of constantly just dysregulated, and we see that a lot. So we really want to make sure that we're understanding the physiology of whatever individual's in front of us. And of course, the capacity of a person, the capability of a person is always fluid based on these regulatory capacities. We're constantly shifting. And you know, as Dr. Bruce Perry says, this is dependent on a nervous system that it feels safe or feels a threat. Many of you may identify with this. This stress that's felt by the body, it just dysregulates us. I personally felt this chronic dysregulation pretty much my whole life. I didn't really know what it felt like to not be in protection. I was always told I was the, you know, the anxious child, you know, the fussy child, the child that, you know, I had very intense sensory experiences. And not until my own children did I truly understand, oh my goodness, my nervous system has a lot of challenges that I didn't even know what it felt like to have a more regulated nervous system consistently. And that's one thing that I have found with the SSP is a sense of presence that I don't have to, it just happens. I'm able to, like I said, do talks like this. I'm speaking at school board meetings. My anxiety level and my sense of my sensory things that have always been kind of off the chart. I mean, you know, I hate movies. I hate restaurants. I know I sound like a fun person, right? You know, I'd rather be out in nature. I've always hated shopping malls, but I never understood why. And so now I have that connection of, this is why. There's nothing wrong with me. This is my nervous system. And, you know, I don't need to go to the mall and I don't need to go to a restaurant. We do takeout. But, you know, these are important things that it's nothing wrong with anybody. It's just a difference. And when we understand that, it makes a big difference to how we either support them or we support ourselves.
Yeah, I got to jump in real quick because as you were explaining that, you know, words were flashing in my mind that I've heard and I've had other parents that have heard, you know, kind of the, well, in the real world, you know, it uses a justification to make somebody do something that's really, you know, uncomfortable, you know, stressful, harmful. And you know, we actually live in a world where we have a lot of choices. There's a lot of things you don't have to do. I mean, you know, I remember a time when, and I've seen a lot of other families that have ended up in this situation where, you know, I had a child that was in a segregated classroom. And the inclusion opportunities were lunch and PE and, you know, what they referred to as specials, which were typically more unstructured in environments that were more challenging for somebody that might have, you know, sensory differences and other concerns. And it was just kind of like easy or lazy inclusion, right? Well, here we go. And bringing up concerns about, well, what about the real world? What about when they do this? What? And, you know, I mean, we live in a world today that, you know, I can get online and order groceries and have them drop off of my door.
Right.
You know, we should be more embracing all the diversity of kind of human experience and the differences and how we are and how we're wired. Yeah. But so often you kind of hear those things like, well, what about in the real world?
Yeah. And I'll tell you, the real world growing up for me, which by the way, is very different than, you know, than it is currently, you know, it is very different. Our schools, we had a lot more outdoor play, free play. You know, we're, you know, whether you were, you know, moving your body in one way or another, or just sitting outside picking grass, right? Something that you maybe had a choice over, but our classrooms are not as sensory safe as everyone believes them to be. And it's interesting because I found myself when my kids were little, I would go volunteer like in the kindergarten classroom. That's when I really was like, my goodness, what is wrong with me? Because I really found my auditory system was really the teacher would be telling me directions on what she wanted me to do for the table group. And it was like the parents on the Peanuts, you know, and Snoopy, right. Wah, wah, wah. I couldn't tune out everything else going on so I could focus on that conversation. But that is something that I've always understood about myself at conferences or in large gatherings. I have always struggled to hear a conversation in large gatherings or with a lot of sensory things. And that's where restaurants, you know, the forks and knives clinking. Often there's, you know, TVs on, people moving about, just a lot of sensory stuff all at once. And, you know, it was a lot of, you know, that's Jennifer. I mean, you know, I felt like I was on the receiving end of things without even understanding it. And so I grew up going, yeah, something, I don't know, something must be wrong with me, I guess. You know, why do I not like these things? And everybody else says I'm supposed to like them. You know, I was a kid who I dressed for comfort and not for fashion. You know, even as a teenager, it's interesting when we have children. This was not something in our vocabulary, you know, 40 years ago. And I'm just so glad that we have so much more information about this, because I was that kid that actually, you know, was a shut down kid. So when you have a kid who's shut down, that just becomes a personality trait without understanding it. A kid who has, you know, externalizing behaviors because of the same reasons, that's then now a problem child that needs to be fixed. And, you know, again, Dr. Ross Green so famously talks about the kids with those lucky behaviors and the unlucky behaviors, but it's the same coin and it's the same underlying physiological reasons, but we have to figure out for each individual, what is it? You know, I always talk about, you know, what is the behaviors are what we observe, but what's under that behavior? What are the roots? You know, we have to get to that level of what's happening for this child. What are their experiences? Because there's not a child in this world that wants to be having a meltdown in the middle of a classroom, or worse. And just like for an adult, no adult wants to be having their own flip out system, you know, and if you've ever, you know, lost your cool with your kids, you know, it doesn't feel good. It is no different for adults as it is for kids, but yet, you know, we don't allow kids to have those big emotions. You know, but it's for all of us about how do we understand ourselves before those emotions take over. Back to that first quote, where let's listen to the whispers of the nervous system before they become shouts. And that's key. That's preventative. That's being proactive. And what a difference it makes for everybody. All right. Well, I'm going to touch on the polyvagal theory, simply because this is the foundation of the Sonic Fin Sound protocol. It's helped us understand our body and brain and how it work. They work together to respond to stressors, stressors of everyday life. And, you know, by applying this polyvagal theory to our personal lives, to our parenting, as well as disciplines in our education field, medicine, within our communities and in management, we can literally understand how safety and co-regulation and connection are paramount to the healthy human experience. And so when we look at understanding the polyvagal theory, we understand that this is the root to social community, to social classrooms, to social, you know, this is, actually I wrote down a quote from Robin Peters Bennett, and she talks about, I think she's the person who's, her initiative is to stop spanking. That was the wrong quote. She talks about how the essential polyvagal theory brings us to this place that it is a human experience. And without all of us understanding, for example, you run into somebody at a grocery store, you know, let's in the parking lot, perfect example, you know, do you get pissed? Or do you go, oh, okay, well, whatever, you know, and just kind of let it roll? That's our nature of our society right now, because the stresses of life have taken us to a place where we no longer let things roll very easily. And we're not doing it within our classrooms. We're not showing much flexibility. And yes, we need to be flexible humans on this planet, because that is how we show up for each other when someone else is having a hard time. We can't show up for somebody else if we're having a hard time, and now we're leaving somebody else to do this alone. And we know that never works. We are a communal species. And, you know, it's so important to understand, especially when it comes to our children, but even for us as adults, we need each other just as much as our children need us when we're upset. You know, through the polyvagal theory, it gives us this scientific framework that is applied through physiological or bottom-up approaches. I'm sure many of you have heard about these versus top-down approaches. And, you know, this is when we use these bottom-up approaches to supporting individuals and helping them become more aware of themselves, they become more regulated and resilient, and they, again, they have greater capacity. I mean, it, to me, this science is just amazing. And having a background, I did my undergrad in exercise physiology, movement and exercise science. I graduated the same year Dr. Porges published his first paper on the polyvagal theory that kind of threw it out into the world in 1994. And I'm like, that's pretty ironic because this was not something, you know, we learned about the nervous system, but we did not learn about this at that point. And so this actually filled in so many gaps for me through my formal education. I mean, I was talking nervous system stuff with people, with my son, because I understood enough of that. But the polyvagal theory has just given me so much more rich information and more science to back up everything that I just feel intuitively, because it makes sense. And when nothing else works, you just are like, I need to understand this. And this is the understanding that has made it very clear.
I want to share just a quick comment with you from, yeah, from Neil, who's made several really insightful comments, and I know is very well versed in polyvagal theory. And he says the problem with the polyvagal theory applied is that our educational systems are entirely geared towards the management of behaviors, yeah, in contrast to slowing down, listening, and feeling. And I mean, that's really dead on to what much of the problem is. I mean, even beyond the management of behaviors, and I don't like terms like classroom management or behavior management, because it's focused in the wrong direction. Right. It's focused on the wrong thing. And unless we go upstream, we're just going to continue to be kind of part of the problem, not part of the solution. And right. I mean, you know, again, you know, so often it's that compliance focus as well, which is like, you know, this is at the heart of some of the change that really needs to happen. Anyway, I just wanted to share that comment. We're about the bottom of the hour, so I just wanted
to make you aware
because I know that there's a
lot. I'm gonna just talk this slide, and then I'm gonna just get right into what the safe and sound is. You know, I think this is an important side. Safety is treatment. Treatment is safety. And Neil, you're exactly right. I love Dr. Lori Desthill says behavior management is not about the kids; it's about us, the adults. And so when we're talking, you know, about behavior plans, well, that's a behavior plan for the adults, not the children. The three organizing principles of the polyvagal theory are co-regulation, which is a biological imperative, neuroception, which is our detection without awareness, and then the hierarchy, the three pathways, the ventral vagal, which is our social engagement, our sympathetic nervous system, which is fight, flight, freeze, and then dorsal vagal shutdown. We're always, our neuroception is always going, am I safe? Is this safe? And we go up and down this autonomic ladder throughout our day, depending on what we're doing. And it's about not being stuck in any one state, and also knowing and having the skills and tools and the regulation to know how to get out of a state when we are feeling stuck. Part of this, Deb Dana talks about how our story follows state. This is one thing that I have really tapped into lately. Humans are meaning-making beings. What begins as the wordless experience of neuroception drives the creation of a story that shapes our daily living. Because how we feel in our body, if we feel safe, that changes a story for us. But if we feel dysregulated, that shifts the story a different direction. So no matter whatever we're feeling autonomically is what the story comes out. And that matters, because sometimes we'll hear our kids talk about something and you go, I wonder what state of regulation they might've been in, because if they were feeling attacked, if they were feeling they got, you know, you can tell how people talk about where they are in their nervous system, whether it be a past story or a current story. And, you know, when we understand that about ourselves, you know, like, oh, you know what? I was feeling really frustrated. I guess, you know, maybe I'm looking at that in a different lens. I'm looking at through my, you know, sympathetic part of my nervous system. But now that I'm regulated, I guess I can kind of see this other perspective. You know, that's what this is about, is our constantly shifting up and down to maintain, you know, that, again, always having that social connection in the end, because that's what our human imperative is. And we cannot, I repeat, we cannot think our way to safety. Even if anyone has done it, let me know. But we just can't. And that's why many therapies don't work until we have that safety. It is truly an embodied experience. It's not cognitive. This is, if you follow me on any social media, this was something Deb Dana said that I just found so important that I talk about in a lot of IEP meetings. The autonomic nervous system does not work with moral meaning or motivation. And just think about that for a minute. What's happening in our classrooms every day? Many adults are operating under false assumptions that children just aren't motivated. They're going to offer them a reward or a consequence. This is what behavior is creating. It's creating a false narrative that it's a lack of motivation. And if we just offer external rewards, kids will comply. But that's not happening, right? That we're not seeing that system work. And it's not because it's a lack of motivation. They simply can't. It's their nervous system that is not regulated enough for them to understand how to use other skills to do something, you know, whether they can just say, I need help, you know, but what the problem is, this is now considered a moral failure. This is really wrong to be doing this to our children, because it's creating a lot of shame and blame in such a year, really early years of, especially in school. And then this is what their story is telling them. This is their narrative now, that I'm just not trying hard enough. Something's wrong with me, and I'm a bad person. And we have to move away from this moral meaning, you know, when we see behaviors, but more importantly, even still, that motivation, to understand that this is not about motivation. The nervous system does not operate with motivation in mind, which is why a sticker doesn't work for the child who needs it the most. And, you know, again, back to why brain state regulation matters. So the SSP, it's an evidence-based listening system designed to reduce sound sensitivities and improve auditory processing, behavioral state regulation, and social engagement behavior through specially filtered music. It's actually quite fascinating. It's filtered through an algorithm, and there's a couple different ways that they do this. It's a 5-hour therapeutic listening intervention designed to support one's emotional regulation and neuroception, and it allows one to become more receptive to the other effective therapies, as we talked about earlier, by using the ear, our auditory sense, as a direct portal to the vagus nerve. It's basically a practical application of the polyvagal theory, which helps retune the nervous system to be more regulated and resilient to life's challenges. Starting again through our sensory system, bottom-up multisensory listening for improved well-being. It is non-invasive. It again helps regulate. It reduces stress and auditory sensitivity. And it's applicable for children and adults with anxiety, autism, ADHD, trauma history, sensory processing differences, and many other things where where neurophysiology dysfunction is at the root cause. This is actually my little baby. She actually just turned 17 last week. But you can see her with her fingers in her ears. And I like what Dr. Lori talks about. The ear muscles matter. And when children are in stress or have pain, they don't hear direction, consequences, or instructions. And this is simply a physiology of the middle ear. It expands to sense more, opens up, and it detects more cues of threat. And then when it feels safe, those muscles contract and relax and are more taut, and they're able to tune out that external noise and focus in on human voice and cues of safety. As I mentioned, in a restaurant, I have a struggle to tune out all that extra noise, the hums of things, the lights, you know, just anything. And then you lose that connection to the human connection, human voice. But it's an adaptation for protection. So we have to understand that this is not something that any of us control. This is our nervous system. And, you know, that's an important part, because when we are relaxed and feeling safe, this muscle, which is really tiny, it constricts to then focus and pay attention. And that is what that sense of felt safety brings. The music of the SSP, which is especially filtered, it is intentionally created to cue signals of safety to our nervous system. So what type of music is there? There's classical music. There's a couple different kinds. There's music that you would hear on the radio. There's a new age fusion playlist. And then we also have a kids playlist that's full of a lot of Disney and music themed songs that they're very familiar with. And, you know, actually, I want to go back just to one on this one slide. What it does, the music is specially filtered to help strengthen. It's like a treadmill for our inner ears muscle, the stapedius. So it's like exercising any muscle. And the more we exercise that muscle, it gets better at tuning into human voice and tuning out those extraneous noises that we often, you know, hums of lights, hums of refrigerators, sirens, anything that our bodies take in as a cue of threat. And we find that this is especially helpful in a way to help calm or regulate that fight or flight reflex for neurodivergent individuals who, as I explained for myself, you know, that's just how I was born. You know, it wasn't anything. And this reflex of being hyper aroused kind of causes a lot of stress for many of us. It, you know, every ordinary day experiences can just feel overwhelming. And therefore we tend to have a lot less energy, and we tend to have a lot more anxiety and other, you know, even somatic experiences, you know, GI symptoms. We see this a lot with many of our kids. And so if there's any way we can help tone down and tamper down using the vagus nerve through our auditory system, again, non-invasively, it's acting as a vagal nerve stimulator in this way to help us retune to more cues of safety. And that's what I have absolutely found for myself, which is why I am bringing this out to my clients and trying to, you know, just bring this to the world. You know, there's still not a lot of people who truly understand the nervous system, polyvagal theory, and then how do we help people when we see the things that we see? And we really collectively, you know, if we can bring this to the therapist that we all see or ask more questions, you know, it's something so simple. I get asked a lot of, you know, what's a session look like? Can I do this online? Yes, these are sessions that we can now do online. It's through an app. And, you know, I have some clients that do it on their own. We did do a session and we did a lot of conversation beforehand, again, safe before sound. But depending on the client, you know, I have a couple younger clients that I do expressive arts with. Let me show you. I have, again, I talked about that whole headphone thing with my son. Let me put that on. This is a headphone with a polar bear on it. It's nice and soft. We have over the head earphones. I actually have.
I really wanted to see you try the polar bear on. You kind of disappointed me.
I actually have a headphone. Turns out there's a reason. I don't like headphones either. Isn't that funny? I didn't know why. And now I know why. It's because I always feel so hypervigilant that I have to make sure I am got one ear ready to go. I wear one headphone, but I now use a headband headphone, not the polar bear one. But actually, I don't want to stretch this one out. My head's a little bigger. but it's fun. And they're soft and cushy. And to me, these are things that could have made a big difference 15 years ago for when my child was doing it originally. But they're, and I will say, just as an FYI, we've done this with our dog. Our dog has a very reactive nervous system. He's a shelter dog. And I don't put headphones on him. He wouldn't like that. But I have a little Bluetooth speaker. And this dog, our dog, Fozzie, he literally looks at the speaker. And we have absolutely noticed his reactive nervous system kind of calm down a little bit. It's kind of amazing. And I do know they use it with horses. There's several ranches in California that are actually studying it in, because it can, you know, it can be used in mammals. And, you know, this is, we are all, you know, there may not be quite the same brain, but they have a nervous system. And so, you know, this is, it's something that is a tool that is readily available, fairly simple. And honestly, it has made such a shift in my personal life that I am so much more present and able to be that co-regulating parent, no matter what state my child is in, because it's how I respond and not react when he's in a dysregulated state that makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. So, I want to quickly share a couple of comments and yeah. Oh, actually you were landing where I was going to suggest.
Oh, yep. I was saying, here's my information.
That's right. So let me hit these comments and then we can talk about your information. And I promised to get you out of here by a certain time. So I want to make sure I do that as well. But you know, we did have a lot of conversation happening as we talked about kind of, you know, compliance, and Neil said, and when they do comply, they are further stressing out their nervous system, cognitive surface compliance, that a body and a body that is in complex PTSD. You know, this idea that the notion that all behavior is intentional, you know, drives a lot of this. You know, this idea that kids are making poor choices, and these are the things that we talk about a lot. Yeah. Is these ideas around you know, behavior that are, you know, that are outdated, incorrect, and really leading to harm. And a lot of that starts with compliance. Yeah. Compliance is the wrong goal here. Let's see. Monica said, SSP has been life-changing for many of my clients. And Neil said, interesting about the dog. You should send that story to Steve Porges, of course. And you know, it's funny because I've, you know, had these same thoughts, which is, you know, we're talking polyvagal, we'll talk in mammalian nervous system.
Right.
You know, I've feel like I've had insights into, you know, trauma that you know, shelter dogs or rescues sometimes experience, you know, and when you meet that rescue dog that's, you know, afraid of any man that's taller than 6 foot, or, I mean, there is a experience behind that and a threat detection system in that animal that's on high. And it's interesting that you brought that in. And Monica again said, you know, I've used this with our shelter dog too. Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
And some love for your polar bear headphones. So we're about at time, and I want to be mindful of you know, making good on the promise to wind up here. You have your contact information here. And of course you are, what's the word I'm looking for? You are certified. Is that the right word? In Safe and Sound
Yeah, it's a certification and a provider. Okay. What they call it.
Okay. And so you are a certified provider in Safe and Sound. So, people, if they have questions, of course can reach out to you. We've got your email here, maybe Courtney can put that in the chat for us as well. Your website there as well. So I'm going to make your slides go away here now that people have had a chance, hopefully, to get your contact information, and just ask you as we're wrapping up here. And I appreciate your, you know, your presentation and discussion about this. You know, I think that there is a lot of potential here, and I think even shifting the understanding that people have. You know, you hit a lot of why this is really important. Why is it important that we're prioritizing safety and connection and all of these other things before we can get to these higher level things that we're demanding of people or putting, you know, placing expectations on kids about. I think you've done a great job.
And, you know, I didn't get into it today, you know, I did, but there is such tremendous research now available. This has been so widely studied now to truly understand why does the SSP work? And it's amazing. So I, you know, reach out to me. I'm happy to share all the research but also you can go to Integrated Listening Systems, which is the company that owns the SSP, and they have all the research on there. And it's utilized, you know, here Dr. Poor just talked about how this originally came about when he thought about an autistic child and how it has evolved, because I'm now using these phrases. I'm like, we've got to move away from this idea that, you know, these are behavioral disorders. These are not behavioral disorders. These are nervous system dysfunctions. And we have to get back to that root problem. And that's what the research is showing. It's like, and that's why they're now finding it's working for so many different pathologies, first off, but also just for, you know, I mean, basic things like, you know, I mean, we pathologize everything, right? Everything is a pathology. But when we now recognize that, you know what, our nervous systems as humans are really under threat in reality, you know, COVID, that was a huge threat that left a trauma for so many people. But so you may not have a diagnosis, but we have this stress in our communities, in our lives, and in our schools. And if we don't have tools and skills to know how to break out of that nervous system dysfunction, to know how to take care of ourselves and to get back to that sense of feeling that co-regulation, relational safety, we're going to be stuck. And you know, you don't have to have a diagnosis to know what maybe I just feel, you know, I don't feel myself. I don't feel, you know, I don't feel like I want to be engaged with other people. You know, I mean, I hear this from a lot of people that there's just like a lot of like, that just seems too much for me. I just can't do that. Mm-hmm. And that's a big signal to the from the body saying, you need to turn inward. You need to focus on your nervous system. You need to, you know, do what is necessary to bring that regulation and that sense of safety. And it can be, you know, a lot of different ways for a lot of different people. Like I said, I use my movement. I am a huge exerciser, but my joints are not cooperating with me as I've gotten older. But I'm now just using simple movements that are actually really supportive of my regulation. So it's a different type of exercise. Before, it was always about my, you know, stamina and my aerobic exercise. Now my health stuff has turned to my regulation of my nervous system. And I think that is a really important thing to recognize. Being an exercise physiology major, growing up doing sports, distance runner, every sport, it was, to me, that was fitness. But I neglected my own nervous system. Luckily that stuff helped naturally. But when I no longer had that, I had to find something to replace it to, again, make my body have some regulation. And these are the ways, you know, between breath work, movement, and this music. I mean, music in general is something I enjoy as well. So, you know, everyone has to find something, because it is going to be on us as individuals so that we can show up better for our kids. And then our kids feel that.
Absolutely. You know, what's echoing through my mind is a quote that's probably in almost every presentation that I ever have given, which is the quote from Maya Angelou, which is, you know, do the best you can until you know better. When you know better, do better. We know better today. We know better in terms of this information we have today about our nervous system, this information that we have today about kind of understanding stress responses. You know, we need to do better and move past a lot of these kind of compliance-based, intention-based processes that really are leading to a tremendous amount of harm and stress and not helping. Yeah. You know,
well, and let's not pretend that we're not up against a $1 billion industry, right? You know, there's so much profit to be made off of all of this, including even all these SEL curriculums that have come out in the last several years since COVID, you know, zones of regulation. I mean, everything has some value. But again, until we really get to that root of everything, you know, kids can tell you a lot of things, but are they, if they're not feeling it and they don't know what the sensation in their body is cueing to them, and that, you know, back to the body is always going to do whatever it can to find balance, even if it's breaking rules, even if it's, you know, pushing someone out of the way, because the body is going to always stay in protection mode until that cue of safety is found again. Yeah. And we have to work with our kids and what we know about children and their development.
Yeah. And we have to focus on ourselves as well. I mean, it's that ability to kind of understand our own, you know, our own bodies, our own nervous system, our own stress response. You know,
they don't teach this to you when you're having a baby nobody teach it. We weren't taught this when we were little.
Well,
there's
a whole lot of bad advice. It's still really prevalent out there. Listen, we are at a time. I want to share a couple of quick comments and I'll give you an opportunity for any final word you have. Let's see. Monica said, Steve has related polyvagal theory to his cat. Stacy said, thanks for your time and effort towards sharing your insights, strategies, and personal experience. Monica said, love this conversation, Jennifer. So, a lot of appreciation for your time today. I want to thank you for choosing to be here and spending your time with us today. And I'll give you an opportunity for any final word that you have, and then we will let everyone go.
You know what? When we turn off the computers, just take a few deep breaths. You know, I find the more intentional we are with focusing in on our own nervous system, then that's, you know, human emotions are contagious. You might just get somebody else to take a deep breath too.
Absolutely. Great, great words to leave us with. Jennifer, I want to thank you and everybody that's been watching today. I want to thank you for joining us. We'll be back again, I think, in 2 weeks, as usual, with another program. So look forward to having you join us then. And until then, we will see you next time.
Great. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone.